Christmas is a two-sided holiday. If you're religious, it's a joyous time of religious celebration. God is in each one of us. But if you're not religious, you can be trapped by our society's economic base. All of our social structure, our social environment, is surrounded by money, the need to constantly grow.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message, wake up. Every station is identification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
You can choose many ways to nourish your soul. Myself, my soul is nourished by nature, by standing in the middle of a wood. And it's very sad that a lot of people, especially young people, will never get to feel that experience. I'd like to present this show just before Christmas, different presentations to City Council to decide what to do with the OMPF funds. This is money that the federal government allocates down to the provincial government, who hands it out therefore to the municipal government. This has been a long argument that the Fed should just give it to the municipalities directly. It's supposed to go to our public social services. Last year, the city of Hamilton used a lot of that money to rebuild sidewalks and infrastructure, completely misguided, given the number of people in poverty in Hamilton. As some of the presenters point out, we have 100,000 people in Hamilton starving, and some of those people are actually working.
Good afternoon. Again, my name is Don Jaffrey. I'm the chairperson for the Food and Shelter Advisory Committee. And I'm going to be accompanied in this presentation today by Alex Ramirez, who's our vice chair and will be serving as a chairperson for the committee next year. We're getting a little practice at as a new committee, bringing information to you, which we hope will be of help to you. So I can begin by maybe reminding you of our mandate as a committee. Our job is to identify urgent needs of citizens for whom barriers exist to obtaining income security, sufficient nutritious food, and access to safe, accessible, and affordable shelter with adequate supports. We also provide information regarding urgent community needs and recommendations information toward their resolution to the Emergency Community and Services Committee. That's you. So we actually have some information we think is important for you to hear today. Where appropriate, along with agency members in our community, we'll take immediate and specialized action to address these issues. So we hope that we are all working together as a community. And provide opportunity for Food and Shelter Advisory Committee members to liaise and collaborate with other levels of government, other committees, citizens, and agencies regarding responses and recommendations for emergency food supports and shelter needs.
Just want to give you a quick overview of the membership for those that are also looking. The Food and Shelter Advisory Committee membership fully is comprised of 14 members. We just had our 14th member added yesterday. And if you want to ask questions later on as who specifically are the representatives, we'll answer that in question and answer period. But as you can see listed here, there's a number of representation that we have in the committee. Specifically, I want to emphasize the five citizen representatives, which I am one of. And it kind of reinforces the approach that the committee has of trying to get as much inclusive participation of people in the Hamilton community. Not just sector providers, but individuals that really have, I think, a vested interest and really have a passion to want to address issues pertaining to food and shelter. And as you'll see later on in the presentation, there are a number of things that have been brought up that we'll be highlighting. So far, the committee, we began our meetings in September 2011, where we have identified priorities. We had our first meeting at Good Shepherd Center out in Wentworth. We also had it at the Neighbor to Neighbor Center up in Athens Street. Thankfully for the space that we have, we've been able to have some very good discussions, and we're actually working on a plan of development for the 2012 year. We're going to be trying to approach the committee in a holistic strategic analysis of how we want to bring forward issues but also work on them collectively as we prioritize them.
Some of these presentations I hope you will listen to and be aware that this is going on right here, right on the streets of Hamilton. It's not someplace else in the world that needs help from the local citizens. It's our local citizens that need help.
And now to the matters of concern to us. We think it's important for you to know from us that in the view of our committee, there's a crisis in women's homelessness in this city. This has been reported on by the city's housing department. It's in a report coincidentally released by the Social Planning and Research Council. And it actually documents to some extent the nature of this crisis. Added to the evidence provided in those reports is a consideration that four precariously housed women have died in Hamilton this year alone. We think in part as a reflection of this crisis in women's homelessness. We know, and you might know, that shelters are full. Women are being turned away, and they're being turned away in considerable number. And when they're turned away, we're not actually clear about what happens to them. We think that the estimates that we have on the population that's being turned away suggest that there are well over 1,000 women being turned away from shelter services annually. That's a lot. Or at least requests for service and support. And they're being turned away because women's shelter is at capacity. And so when they're turned away, we don't know much about them. We don't know how many people those 1,000 or more requests represent. That's a concern. We don't understand the nature of their condition. We don't understand what solution they're finding to their condition when they're turned away, turned down for their request for shelter. We think that this requires immediate service intervention. We think this requires sustainable long-term service solutions, and these aren't going to be easy solutions, and they're likely not going to be inexpensive. We think that in part the solution to this condition will come through your support and our support to the work of the Women's Homelessness Planning Collaborative, which is a recently established group looking more closely at this issue and ways to solve it. Second issue that's critical and important for you to understand, this I suspect won't either be news to you, there is hunger in Hamilton, and there's good evidence of it. We know that food banks alone experience a great demand from members of our community. So we know that about 18,432 residents in our community are relying on food banks for some service and support. 18,263 hot meals are served via meal programs in this community annually. Hamilton households requiring Ontario Works income support have increased by 30%, and I think you're continuing to get information about the trajectory for that claim on Ontario Works on into the future. And that claim load, as I understand it, is forecast to continue to increase. We know that a great many people who are using food bank services are dependent on Ontario Works and ODSP for their income. We know that a great many users of food bank services have children, and those children too then are dependent on food bank services. Our committee would recommend that individuals require more income to purchase food. It's an income problem. But we think too that the emergency food system requires financial stability, and that we hope that you'll be find yourself in a position to allocate more support to that system. In fact, our committee would hope and recommend to you that you support annualized municipal funding for emergency food to Hamilton households, and that you do that through an allocation to, again, an allocation of funding support to the emergency food system in Hamilton.
So those were issues that were brought up that were a main priority, and it dominated discussion, but also there was other things that came up. One thing that came from one of the citizen representatives was the issue of bed bugs in Hamilton. On my way here, taking the bus, conveniently enough, I had seen there is advertisement focusing on awareness of bed bugs. So it is an issue that I think the city knows about, but what we have emphasized is there needs to be a broadened approach in terms of addressing the issue. The citizen representative had mentioned that herself, she is someone who is coming forward with this not as reflecting someone's input, but her as a personal case, saying that she's had to deal with fumigations numerous times and they don't solve the problem. And she brought up a very important point that in a building where it's constantly being fumigated, this becomes a health and safety issue, especially for kids that live in the building. So that point really struck a chord. We realized this has to be an issue that we want to approach in the 2012 year. We are part of the strategic planning that we're looking at as a committee is potentially a establishing a working group towards the bed bug issue to try and get as much coordination of the efforts happening in the city regarding this issue. Like I mentioned, we know there's already awareness and there's people talking about it, but given the limited resources that exist, we really want to try and coordinate a collaborative approach amongst all services that work towards this and try to maximize the input of the services that can be provided in addressing this. Transportation barriers and impact on food shelter is also another issue. These issues all tend to be intricately connected. They're somewhat separate, but you can see how they all follow the same branch. Ensuring adequate representation in sectors to the Food and Shelter Advisory Committee is a way how we want to establish a committee that links different services together and trying to accommodate all of these issues in a holistic approach, because we do see them as being all intricately connected. So this is the priorities that we have identified thus far in the three meetings we've had, and I can assure you there's going to be a lot more, but that's not to scare you, that's just to say that we as a committee want to provide as much information as possible to council about the issues that are going on and how we actually want to act upon resolving them.
Some of the councillors made good statements about the fact that they are a councillor for this city and their interest is Hamilton.
Many thanks, Don, and many thanks, Alex. And we do have a couple of questions. And Councillor McCaddy, then Whitehead, then Farr. Councillor McCaddy, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks very much for the presentation, Don and Alex. I find myself often overwhelmed in this committee, as you can imagine. The magnitude of the challenges that we're facing in the community are never ending, and from time to time we find a little solution for something, and yet a number of other things open up beyond that, or the band-aid that we've placed in somewhere, the dike breaks, and we're off again on the particular issues. And an example of that, I think, is the report coming to us in a moment, 8.1 on our agenda, which is allocation of the Intermunicipal Partnership Fund money that we have received from the province, about $4 million, $4 million and change. And we're struggling with how best to put that money. I mean, that's one-time money, so from a sustainability perspective, that's not the definition of sustainability, one-time money. So there's that aspect of it. So staff have actually recommended spending that money over 4 years, committing to three programs over 4 years, which is sustainability in this business. 4 years is a long time unfortunately for us, in the way that we can support something. So emergency shelter, intensive case management services is one project. Food banks, Christmas hamper program is the second program, and the affordable transit pass program is the third one. And looking at your slides, the emergency food system requires financial stability. Well, here's a 4-year commitment, which is big news for the city. We haven't done that before. Your other slide, I think, spoke to the linkage with transportation and food and shelter, and the affordable bus pass program is meant to get at that. And the emergency shelter intensive care management services is meant to help people in the housing continuum leave the shelter and to be placed in a other form of housing, wrap them with services, and help them be successful. There are public health brought forth a separate report that says put the money into a food voucher system, which would help on the OW side of things for income. Extra $20 a month, which is not a lot, but it's dedicated to food. And then I understand there's another comment coming today on the domicile hostels underfunded. They should receive some of this money as well. And we could pick up a number of other ones, the women's emergency shelters from your presentation. Do you have any advice for us as we make that decision in the next half hour or so?
Well, I can really only offer a response that I think captures our committee's perspective. And so I think it's fair to say that we acknowledge that these are complex issues. I don't think that our committee, has really been equipped in our first few meetings to give a full and comprehensive strategy or even a response to the proposed strategy, other than to say that our committee would support the recommendation, or at least the option that you're considering, of making an annual allocation of $350,000 to support food banks. That was discussed at our committee. That was supported at our committee. And so I can say with confidence on their behalf that we would support a choice on your part to make that allocation to that food security system in that amount, and that it would be the advice of our Food and Shelter Advisory Committee that you make that to the extent that you can, an annualized commitment to support that system and keep it stable.
Some of the other counselors have been sitting there for years listening to the same reports, and they obviously do not get it. Terry Whitehead would be one of those counselors. You'll hear him say, why don't we just, you know, make the province pay for it? Why is the city paying for it? I mean, this is a silly game, and he was called on it by Brian McCaddy.
Thank you, Councillor McCaddy. We have Councillor Whitehead next in for.
Thank you. Don, I always appreciate when you come forward, but I think the first comment, we need to make sure that it's clear that the scope that you deal with in the context of this report is fairly narrow. Would that be a correct saying? So you don't deal with domiciliary hostels, you haven't considered those issues, and many of the other issues that impact this community.
So our terms of reference were referred to in the early slide, and I think it's a subject to some interpretation as to what issues we can attend to, given those terms of reference. So I would say that I'm not sure what the answer to that is, other than to say that we're concerned about people who are marginalized, disadvantaged, have needs that our community needs to understand and address. And there are lots of issues, and so we've identified two priorities for you here today, and Alex identified a number of issues that the committee's also considering and hopes to look at. I mean, I think our capacity to deal with the full range of issues is fairly limited, and so I wouldn't want you to think of us as your only resource in trying to identify and understand and respond to issues.
I think the point I was making is there's other committees that have taken has other scopes of responsibility and make and provide advice. Yours is, you indicate that this is fairly new and you've been focused on issues. I just want to ask a question. Back in 1992, there were 17,500 plus people on OW. And we never, ever had to make the commitment to the food banks then that were what's being requested of the taxpayer today at 14,000. What has changed?
Well, I think one of the things that's changed most significantly is the income benefit rate that's available to people on OW. Sometime after 1992, I think it was in 96, those benefit rates were cut by, I think, 21.6%. And that really hurt. That really hurt a lot of people who were counting on that income support system to meet their basic needs. So we still had food banks operating in Hamilton in 1992. When the income support available to those individuals and families was cut by another 22%, and it has never come back, it hasn't even come close to coming back to the kind of income support system it was in 92. So I think part of what we're seeing is we're trying to figure out, well, how do we help those people meet their basic needs? Because we used to have a system that did a better job of it, and it doesn't do it anymore. And so now we're left with, finding these alternative measures, which, by the way, I think continue to be inadequate to the task, because providing people with an adequate income would solve many of these problems for many more people, would do it, in a more effective way, probably at a lower cost, probably simpler. But we don't have that option right now, and so food banks become a more important part of our community's response.
If I could also add to that response as well. To your first one as well, the issue of hostels actually did come up in the discussions, the broad discussions that we had in issues that we wanted to discuss as a committee. But part of our strategic reorganization that we're going to plan forward 2012 is an organization, it is a structural organization where we want to get much more consultation, not just from committee members, but also expanding it and branching out. Through this, we see that the more input we get from citizens to contribute towards the committee, we will be getting much more issues that come up ourselves won't come up with. Secondly, I would add as well that the reason why I think there is much more of an emphasis now for the food banks is because regardless if you are on OW, there is a substantial amount of this population that still heavily depends on food banks, even when they do have employment. If you just look at the Code Red report, again, 1 in 5 live in the poverty line. That's 100,000.
My point is it was 17,500. So if you took the Lipitz test,
yes.
17,500 individuals are on OW in 92. Today there's 14,000, and we're asked to quadruple our contribution in the food banks on an annualized basis And I'm trying to reconcile in my mind how we went from 92, where that wasn't an issue, to today, where it is an issue.
Well, historically speaking, just after 92 was when public sector investment was butchered. So that's probably where you can see that correlation. But the reason why we can see it's much more of an emphasis now is because of the outcry. I mean, the food banks have said we need more donations. So this is just our way of conveying, you know, this is how we relay that interpretation. They're asking for more, and so we're just simply trying to, you know, facilitate the desperateness that they've indicated that we're running out, we need more donations. So it does seem that we would like to say we want to alleviate it, but again, we're just facilitating what they've been telling us.
Now, there was an individual, an executive director of one of the largest food banks in Canada, Gerard Kennedy. He was quoted at one point in saying that the cities should not get in the business of funding food, and he was of the largest food bank in the country, should not get in the business of funding food banks, quote unquote. You've made a point that supplements have been dropped, has never been caught up. So I guess the question is, whose responsibility is it in the end when we talk about social services? The amount that social services are provided to the recipients, is it the city's responsibility, is it the province's responsibility? And if there's not enough food dollars on that funding, again, whose responsibility is it?
It probably has been most municipalities. They have to deal with food banks because I would say municipal governments are the ones that have to deal with more with community work, and food banks is just that. It's more direct community work. Most, I think, citizens here would hold municipality accountable for food banks, and I think they would actually fear having this brushed off to provincial government because they see it would just be a more longer delay and more, I guess, bureaucratic processes that would stall them from getting there what they need. So I personally would think that most citizens would consider it to be a municipal accountability as opposed to provincial. When we come down to finance, we can see how it becomes much more of an issue. But
my point is, it's not our core operation. Food for OW was supplied and funded by the province of Ontario. They've cut the money back. It wasn't the city that cut the money back, and that's why we're in this dilemma. And my point is, I hate having the finger. And here's the issue. The issue is, every time we pick up the spade and take on the burden on the property taxpayers, property taxes is not a progressive system. So every time we tick something up, we let the province off the hook. So what you're asking us today is let the province off the hook for the next 4 years.
Well,
okay, Councillor Whitehead. Are you asking for anything today, Don?
Well, I just wonder if I can offer one comment. I mean, I think that, you know, when people are going hungry in our community, particularly children, but anybody who's going hungry in our community, I think that's a community responsibility. And people are going hungry right now. And so, although I appreciate their sort of, you know, their legitimate and appropriate questions about, you know, which jurisdiction is best suited to dealing with this, in the end, I think while that's getting sorted out, we can't ignore the fact that we have to come to terms with this. We have to provide help where we can, and if you're in a position to provide some support to food bank systems to help people who are hungry, then you might want to be guided by that.
So have you done a research and study and take a look at how, because you indicate this is should be a municipal
okay, first
responsibility.
Okay, can you go through the chair?
To the chair?
Okay. The question is?
Can you tell me how many municipalities across Ontario provide annualized funding in the terms of over 300, other than Toronto and Ottawa, to provide $350,000 on an annualized basis? Or how many actually has annualized funding for food banks, period?
Can you include statistically the demographics associated with that?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. No, I don't have the answer to that question, but it appears to me that increasingly municipalities are turning to this option. So I think that's the trend that I'm paying attention to, is that we actually don't have an income support system that's adequate to the task, and until that's fixed, municipalities are going to be, I think, increasingly called upon to provide an alternative response, something that'll help in its place. You know, I remember a time, you know, back in 1980, there were no food banks in Canada, and that changed. And so we're things continue to change, and we continue to struggle with how do we best meet the needs of our community. And we're using all levels of government, and we're using community organizations, and we're using volunteers, and it's and we still need people to contribute one way or another to help each other in this community.
So do you realize that per capita, that the city taxpayers of Hamilton are paying more per capita than any other community in Ontario?
We're paying to social
services. Yes.
You know what? You know, realistically, though, if you want specific answers, we could. If you want us to draft a report to have to you by January, February, we can do that. We can find other municipalities and their annual. We could, if you want. But at the same time, you mentioned, aside from Toronto and Ottawa, Hamilton is the second largest city in the province before Ottawa. So if you differentiating that isn't that accurate, we have to put into account this is the second largest population in the province. So comparing that to other municipalities, we do have a lot more of a burden to deal with. And I think that we can't really, we could make a comparative analysis if we'd like, but we can't neglect the fact that there is, as Don mentioned, there is hunger going on. And obviously the issue of the tax burden, it's much more of a broader systemic problem that I think we have to deal with. We have to see how the kick down from the province, which comes from the federal, we have to deal with a much more systemic issue. But how can we address this right now? And that's what we want to say. It is a major issue, and we want to convey that message and seeing that we are emphasizing it as a priority, and we want to find alternative ways, if there are financial constraints, additional to the stability, the financial stability of how we can address the issue.
I really appreciate you coming forward. I think it just needs to be highlighted that you're coming in and trying to plug one hole when another one might be 1,024 individuals that are hard to put into homes that find themselves on a street. So the challenge for us is we only have so much capacity, and I just wanted to let you know that there's many other issues we have to deal with.
And apparently you think a velodrome is more important. Councillor Duvall.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Don and Alex, and I really appreciate the report. I know you guys do a lot of hard work, and I think some good comments were made from you that when it comes down to responsibility, and this isn't just a Hamilton problem, this is a Canadian problem. There's many municipalities out there that are going through the same struggles that we are. So I know in the city of Hamilton, there's a lot of great people out here, and we've done this for years and years and years, and we've always looked for temporary solutions. But we need permanent fixes, and that's for sure. So I'm just asking, is your group ever, have they gone to the federal and to the provincial governments, made presentations on an ongoing basis, and have you made any headway?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I would say, first of all, the Food and Shelter Advisory Committee is effectively a creature of your committee or City Council, and so we don't really have a mandate that I'm aware of to go to other levels of government with our information and our suggestions. And I don't know, maybe you could instruct us or authorize us to do that. I don't know. I think maybe a more effective way is for you to actually be the voice for the concerns that our committee is raising, so that as a city council, you convey those messages to other levels of government. But I know that there are great many others in the community who are active in other collaborations and associations and networks, and through those vehicles and their voices, these messages are getting to other levels of government. But, you know, it would be important to have City Council add its voice and its recommendations to that process.
And through you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, Don, and I know the City of Hamilton does. Through Joanne Pereira's group, we make requests on a continuous basis, and we know the struggles that the people have, especially with the amount of job losses and unfortunate circumstances that families might fall under. But it would be great for other groups such as yourself to help us with a bigger voice, making presentations to the province so that we know we can say, look, we've got groups A, B, C, and D that come to us on an annual basis that it's unaffordable anymore, and we need to find a permanent fix, not just the municipal government looking for temporary fixes, solutions on this.
I would say that's an excellent recommendation, and if the city council would authorize us to present to provincial federal government, we'd be more than happy to do it.
So moved. Yeah, I'll take that motion at this moment, actually. Councilor Duvall, seconded by Councilor Whitehead.
All right. And again, I thank you for the work you do. I don't think there's one person in this room or not one person in this city that wants to see somebody go hungry. And it's really getting to be a struggle, and it's really getting to be a concern, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And it's not just with the people that are having hardships of OW and ODSP. It's people that are not living and making a livable wage, or people's pensions have been cut through inflation. And now our big taxpayers...
Thank you, Councillor Duvall. We now have a list of Councillor McCaddy then far. So, Councillor McCaddy.
Mr. Chair, I just think we have to be careful not to play games on this kind of stuff. The federal and provincial government have the ability to download responsibility. The feds download to the province, downloads to the municipalities. We don't have that privilege to download to anybody else. So the buck stops here. And in my view, we have to step up and try and find solutions. So to get into a discussion of things not being our responsibility, or, you know, what's Ottawa doing, what's Kitchener doing, that kind of stuff. I work for the city of Hamilton. I work for the people of Hamilton. So I'm gonna focus on what's going on here. I'm gonna work with the Poverty Roundtable to communicate to the province and the federal government and whoever else is part of that discussion to make those points. I think it really is a fool's game to point fingers in other directions. Ultimately, we've got people without food on the streets of Hamilton, without shelter on the streets, who can't get to their jobs because they can't afford transit, other issues that we have to deal with. And for us to point to the other levels of government is entirely, it's just a waste of time. We can do that, we can feel good about ourselves, we can say, hey, if we do it, the province is going to let us do it, they're not going to do it. They couldn't give a damn about the city of Hamilton most of the time. That's our job. Our job here is city council to do that. So let's not try and deflect any of these issues, and let's not try and make people say things to prove our points or anything. I think we have to look at what we can do at this table and take the necessary steps at this table to alleviate poverty and to make sure people are in the best possible shape here in the city of Hamilton.
Well said. Thank you, Councillor McCaddy. Councillor Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I concur with the two previous speakers 100%. We have a responsibility as elective representatives here in this municipality, and I think most who elected us would feel strongly that we're heading in the right direction. Don, Alex, thank you very much for the presentation. I just wanted to hit the bedbug thing real quick. Were you aware when you researched and looked into this on the local level that it's a much bigger problem quite obviously throughout this province? Yeah, I see you're nodding your heads. That's a good enough answer. Through the chair, were you also aware that the Good Shepherd Works are very active in trying to work with the city? They're under contract with us, and they're doing that hot box thing. Did you have discussions with Good Shepherd's Works? Did they report back to you on the success? And can you give us an update to date to this committee?
We're still at the very early stages as a committee of exploring and understanding this issue. We're familiar with the response that Good Shepherd Services provides. We're connected to them in our committee discussions. We have committee members who are clear that, the scale of our response to this point isn't adequate to the task and so needs attention, and that's where we're going with it.
There was discussion, and the member of the committee who actually, Maria Cristina, who had brought up the issue with her personal encounter with bedbug issue where she lives, she had mentioned that she has gone to these outlets, and again, what the solution is predominantly given is we'll go and fumigate. And she said she's had to, on two occasions, throw away all of her possessions, and they still come back. So that's why, because from her, and because she's a member on the committee, and she's brought this up, just not as different from fumigation. We need to find other approaches. If this is a broader problem, like you mentioned, a province-wide, then the city should probably emphasize this and relay that message potentially to the province, right? But a strong message saying, here it's been strongly identified, and we need to find another approach. We do know there's already work being done, but according to this member, it's not enough. So there has to be more.
The statistic in terms of the women's shelters, and particularly the number 1,000 annually in this last year turned away, that's very disturbing. To me as a counselor, and certainly here in this ward, you're probably seeing a lot of that. And your response to that is that we just need to get a better understanding, and it's obviously going to be a long-term solution, I heard you say. I'm more interested in a short-term solution, so not a question to you, but a question to staff, Mr. Chairman, if I may. So if I procedurally, I guess, would receive this presentation, and then you can put me on the list. I can ask a question to staff. So thank you very much for the presentation, and I'll go to Joanne on this. This is disturbing. Would you not agree through the chair?
Through you, Mr. Chair, Jillian will speak further to the issue, but we've been aware of the crisis in the women's shelter, and there definitely absolutely is an issue with not enough beds, but Jillian is working with the community, and she'll speak because we do have a solution. So Jillian will speak to that solution if she may, Councillor.
Through the Chair, I would say that we have a short-term and a long-term solution. We do have a women's homelessness sector collaborative, and that collaborative is chaired by Catherine Kalinowski from the Good Shepherd Center. And on that collaborative is representatives from the Ministry of Community and Social Services, the shelters that serve women who are fleeing violence, the YWCA, so on and so forth. And what they have identified as being the issue is that not that there aren't sufficient emergency shelter beds, but rather that women require a supported transitional housing in order to get back on their feet again and eventually go on to independence. And so what we are doing is we're working with the YWCAA and helping them fund staff to provide transitional housing there, as well as Healing the Circle, which is a residence on Rosedean Avenue that is operated by the Native Women's Center, and they are going to be increasing the amount of transitional housing that is available to women, which in turn will free up the beds at the women's shelter at Mary's Place. And on top of that, we are also talking about funding transitional workers, and what they would do is they would support women not only while they're in transitional housing, but when they go on to independence as well. So we're feeling very positive about that. We're just pulling the funding together in order to do that, and it should be implemented soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify that 1,000 number, if I could, through you, Mr. Chair.
Sure, absolutely.
It's not 1,000 different women. We don't know how many different women there are. I'm not trying to minimize it,
Thank you.
I just don't want the story to be in the paper that it's 1,000 separate women that are homeless, because it may be. It is significant.
1,000 requests that have been denied.
Some people many times, perhaps.
That's a very good point. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Whitehead.
I really appreciate the work of every committee that comes forward. I think it's important when we're dealing with information sessions that we ensure that all the information is out there, the history and how we got to where we are, because it is important not just for the people in this room, but certainly for the viewers on that are paying the taxes, quite frankly. And I think that's part of the role sitting around at this horseshoe.
It's amazing that Terry Whitehead is making this statement about remembering the history, since he seems to be the one that doesn't remember anything, including the presentation that was just presented to him.
8.1, the Ontario Municipal Partnership Program, Reconciliation Reinvestment. Members of committee, item 8.1 is before you, and we will hear the delegations respecting this item. First on the list is David Czerkowski, representing the Social Justice Strategic Committee. Please come down to the podium for your delegation. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Chair and councillors of the committee. My name is Dave Jakuski, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Social Justice Strategic Committee. My presentation is in hard copy on the in the agenda. I also emailed it out, and I hope you all had a chance to read it. I'm going to speak to the three requests that we wish to make. As a committee, we had the opportunity to meet with staff on two occasions as they prepared this report. We appreciated the opportunity we had for input, and we find merits with part of the reports. However, we see there's three missed opportunities to address very key challenges and meet the city's own stated commitments. So the three requests of the committee, that so we don't miss these, and let me state them clearly. The first one is be strategic with social investment. In light of the city renewing their strategic vision in the very near future, we ask that the city establish an explicit and comprehensive social investment strategy, which will fully address the alarming ongoing social investment crisis we have in our community. We have 100,000 citizens continuously struggling with numerous poverty issues such as housing, food security, income security, and full participation in society. We ask that you match resources with needs. In light of current and future budgetary pressures, which are looking for the best value for public dollars spent, as well as the Cabrera report, and this is one, the economic impact of social assistance in Hamilton, which was presented to the GIC on July 4th, which revealed that social investments, or what Dr. Cabrera would call pro-poor policies, the best economic multiplier for public dollars. We request that the Community and Social Services Department be exempt from a 0% departmental budget restriction, and in fact be allowed to increase their budget as needed to properly address the social needs of social housing, food security, basic income, and other needs to meet this ongoing social crisis in our community. Our last act is that you engage the community for better results. In a continuing tradition of extensive community engagement, that formalized mechanisms be defined which will maximize community participation to address not just the immediate symptoms of poverty, but the root causes plague our community, to identify and eliminate them. I'm one of those 100,000 people in poverty. I actually grew up in a low-income family. Most of your councillors have seen me here on a regular basis listening to what's going on in this council chambers, because the decisions that are made here affect us out there. And that's where earlier this year, when I made a presentation that put the $4 million into that fund, I realized the importance of coming here and listening to what you have to say. When there was a municipal election last year, the Spectator put out a report, a poll, and asking what are the issues for Hamilton. The number one was poverty. And I'm glad that the citizens realize that. When I talk about people about Hamilton, I said, welcome to Hamilton, the poverty capital of Canada, because we are. And it's really simple. When you have $1,000 and you have a choice of living between Toronto and Hamilton, what would you choose? When you have $600 or less, do you have a choice? I don't think you do. And I've heard a lot of good things in this council chamber about addressing things like the Pan Am Games, about addressing things like area rating and waste management. I've heard very little on poverty. And this is where there's an opportunity next week when all the councillors and the senior management are going to meet across the road and are going to set the strategic vision for the next 4 years. What are the priorities of this city? And when you do that, I really hope that you remember what was said here today. And I want to thank the previous speakers, because I think they made my point about how big the situation is, about struggling to keep a roof over your head and to keep food on the table. And it doesn't have to go beyond that. And so please don't think these little one-offs. Be strategic. From the round table, they say there's 100,000 people in poverty, and this is unacceptable. And it is. And I heard someone ask, who's responsible? Well, the roundtable has something to say. No one's to blame, and while I may beg to differ on that, they also say, and I completely agree, we are all responsible. And as a community, I think we need to deal with poverty, because it's the issue that's holding the city back. It needs to be the issue, because if we agree to tackle poverty, we must address all the others. And so I'm asking you to make poverty the issue in the city. And I'd like you to almost declare a war that we get all 505,000 Hamiltonians saying we'll do whatever it takes for as long as it takes until we eradicate it. Because until then, the city will not be what it's supposed to be. It will be the poverty capital of Canada. Instead of, how about this vision? The city that tackled poverty and beat it. So please be strategic with your social investments. Because when we have this $4 million in this fund, do we even know where to put it? And we don't. And this is where I think we really need to look at the social needs here. You know, I've here heard about, we have an infrastructure crisis. What about the social crisis in this city? You know, we have 100,000 people. What does it take to fix them? $10,000? $20,000? Right there. It's $2 billion, not $200 million a year, $2 billion over 10 years. 100,000 people that need help. Please help.
We the people, raise your hand, protest for your
There are serious issues out there. Bed bugs is one of them. Transportation, a roof over your head, food, all summed up by a presentation by Dave Sikorski. When you divide the funds that are a one-time download of just over $4 million over a 3 or 4 year period, you're not solving anything. You're stretching them too far, and I'd like to follow the trail of that money. Where does it go? Is it going to places that hire people to live off people that are in poverty? Is it going to places that have to pay expensive light and heating bills and rent and building? Or is it going to places like the Olive Garden, where what they do is cook food, period. They cook food and feed people. St. Vincent de Paul, Salvation Army, those are all good places the fund should be going to. But unfortunately, the way our city staff works, they give it to the known entity that thinks like they do. No control over the funding, where its direction is. And no community input, as you'll hear from the presentation from Dr. Sally Palmer, that there are poverty groups out there that have made presentations for the funding, not wanting to see it go into sidewalks or roads again, and to have more community input and control over the money.
You are listening to The Other Side of the News on 93.3 CFMU FM.
Moving on, we have Sally Palmer, who is representing the Social Action Committee, to the podium. Welcome, Sally. The floor is yours anytime you're ready.
Thank you, Chairman Merule, and good afternoon, councillors. I want to build on what Dave Sikorski said on behalf of the Social Justice Group. We're another group of community advocates, the Social Action Committee of the Ontario Association of Social Workers, the Hamilton branch. And we support the request that Dave just spelled out to you, that the city develop a comprehensive social investment strategy and that it develop formalized structures to maximize community participation in developing programs to address poverty, especially the participation of low-income people. And I'm going to get a little more specific about today's report and how we believe it should be accepted. We see some gaps in today's report, and this is the report on the OMPF Reconciliation Reinvestment Report. It does not set out a comprehensive plan to address the needs of our lowest income citizens. Instead, it proposes to use the $4 million received this year from the OMPF to ensure ongoing funding to three existing programs over the next 4 years. Our two main concerns about option two in the report, which is the one that staff recommends, is that it gives priority to existing programs to the exclusion of new initiatives, and that it does not allow for community consultation in the allocation of funds. First, priority to existing programs. We feel that today's report contradicts the stated purpose of the Social Services Initiative Reserve, which was established in 2006. And it's on page 4 of today's report that the purpose was defined as funds to assist with urgent, temporary, finite program requirements. Secondly, the 2006 definition of purpose fits well with the Board of Health's plan for a one-year farmers market gift certificate program, which has been mentioned, the $20 a month, for individual recipients of Ontario Works. And these are the poorest people in our community, way below the low-income earners. And it still needs a funding source. I'm going to mention the benefits of the farmers market plan. First of all, a food supplement is desperately needed to help fill the $115 per month gap, which was in the Department of Public Health's report to you last month, between the needs of recipients and the inadequate social assistance rates, less than $600 a month. Secondly, a municipal food supplement will add strength to your request to the province last July when you asked them to raise social assistance rates to a realistic level. I think it would have a lot more weight if they saw that Hamilton was making a move to try and fill in where they are lacking. then the Farmers Market Gift Certificate Program also fits the criterion for funding, which is stated in today's report, that no other funding source is available. I understand that it was suggested they look for private money, but it's pretty hard to get private money to cover low social assistance rates. If counselors want employable people on social assistance to find jobs, and I'm sure we all do, they need a healthy diet. Ontario Health Minister Deb Matthews wrote a report back in 2004 on the social assistance system. And she said, people relying on social assistance are desperately trying to survive. They have no energy left to think about what they need to do to improve their future. As you know, there are two options in today's report, and one of them is the one recommended by staff, and the other is the one recommended by the Social Justice Strategic Committee that Dave and I are both on. If you accept option two, recommended by staff in today's report, the residual funds from the OMPF will be insufficient to cover the Farmers Market Gift Certificate Program. There's only going to be $375,000 left out of that $4 million, because most of it's going to be locked in to a four-year program. This supports our concern that today's report would give priority to existing programs against urgent, temporary, finite ones. Today's report also contradicts the motion approved by Council in April 2011 that 50% of the OMPF funds were to be transferred to the Social Services Initiative Fund to support one-time social services-related costs. The second gap is the lack of community consultation. In April 2011, Council decided that consideration was to be given to establishing a public advisory committee to guide the allocation of the OMPF funds, similar to the community board that guides the allocation of federal homelessness funding. As Dave Cherkuski has pointed out, this is consistent with the emphasis on citizen inclusion and engagement in decision-making in the city's own report called The Playbook, a framework for human services planning in Hamilton. We are asking committee members to support option one in today's report. Option one is first shown on page seven. It includes SIR, Community Planning Group, to recommend funding priorities to City Council for approval. Option two has no community consultation, citing cost as the reason. Without community consultation, the people most affected by programs to be funded by the OMPF, low-income people, will have no voice in how the money is spent to counter poverty in our community. The staff report gives a misleading impression of addressing the Social Justice Strategic Committee wish for public consultation in allocating the funds by stating, to address their concerns, that's the social justice concerns, it is recommended that any new program funded through SIR have a community engagement process with an emphasis on citizens who access the program, such as those with lived experience. This proviso does not ensure community involvement in decisions about the allocation of funds, which are the most, certainly the first point that has to be jumped over by any group asking for funding. So the conclusions are that we should, number one, we should avoid multi-year funding. Any program applying for funds from SIR should be subject to annual reviews. Option two, the staff one, would set money aside for multi-year funding to existing programs, which is not consistent with the defined purpose of SIR as funds to assist with urgent, temporary, finite program requirements. Secondly, include community consultation. Option two would have staff making the recommendations for funding decisions without community involvement. This is not consistent with the city's own vision for citizen involvement as highlighted in the playbook. And finally, help for our poorest citizens. Option two would leave the city unable to fund the Farmers Market Program, which was recently approved by councillors sitting as the Board of Health. In the yellow handout, there are suggested amendments to the report, which would make it consistent with option one. And I'm saying if the committee agrees with option one, there's a number of sections. Four different sections have to be omitted, which are the ones that give priority to these three programs. And then finally, Appendix A would need to be rewritten as it was developed to fit with Option 2.
Unfortunately, that's not what happened. Council, for some reason, did not listen to the community presenters, and they listened to the staff, who was out of touch now with the street, and they gave the funds to three basic organizations. Merry Christmas to those people. I don't know how they can live with themselves. So what they did is divided up. $350,000 a year will go to food banks and go to food shelter, advisory committees. This is a mockery of the poor. Dave Sikuski pointed out that Hamilton is known across Canada as being the poverty center for Canada. 100,000 people living in poverty. We are second highest in the province of Ontario for the number of people and working poor who cannot pay rent and buy food. And once again, Terry Whitehead asked the question of, well, we had 17,000 in this year and the number of people have gone down to 14,000, and why has the money gone up? Unbelievable question when you stop to consider the price of food costs and the cost of living and how fast that has risen just in the past few years compared to income being not only stagnant, but it still not able to recover from the Mike Harris years where it was cut back so far in 1992. We have no more social system. Mike Harris made sure of that, and the Conservatives have followed through with that, and so have the Liberals. So this Christmas, when you think about doing something, instead of spoiling whatever person in your family wants an iPad or some expensive item or gift that they could probably get anyway, think about giving that money directly to one of the groups. These groups, in fact, contact the SPRC, Don Jaffrey. That's the Social Public Planning and Research Council. He's one of the fellows that presented first off, and he is on one of the committees. And I'm sure he would be able to advise you where you should send that money. I know that there is an envelope that goes around from West Ministries asking for you to donate a few dollars, a cup of coffee, and you can feed three people. That's a good cause, but that only fills their stomach for a few hours of one day. It's not solving the problem. I suggest you would be better off actually volunteering and helping out with any of the groups that presented to City Hall, and there's many of them. Make a donation to the organizations that are already out there that know exactly what to do and are in touch with the people living on the streets, like the Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul. As we go out with this song from 1984, that was written to help the starving in Ethiopia. Well, right now, when you hear these words, think about the starving right here in the streets in Hamilton. Thanks for listening.
But when you're happy Fine Radio.
CFM News.